Thank you everyone for coming, and thank you for the invitation to PI. It's nice to be here, not really spent much time in Canada before. Okay, so I want to talk about decomposable SPECT modules, and as I probably said in my abstract, hopefully, I'm going to give a kind of survey of what is and isn't, or well, mostly what is already known in the kind of classical situation of symmetric groups, and then talk about how, with my collaborator Louise Sutton, we're trying to generalize this into a slightly different setting. I guess if you want to look at it like this, into the setting of the Hecker algebra of the type B bar group, of the sine symmetric group. Okay, so where to start? So let's start with decomposable SPECT modules in level one. So this basically means symmetric group and its Hecker algebra. So throughout, F is going to be a field of characteristic P greater than or equal to zero. Most of this, kind of the first couple of things we'll discuss are going to be pretty boring when P is zero, but it will get interesting even then. So what I care about is SPECT modules. So what are these guys? So the SPECT modules, which we'll call S lambda, and we have a set of these ranging over all partitions of N. Okay, so for every partition, I have this module S lambda called a SPECT module, and this is a module over the symmetric group. And this, if you like, this is a complete set of iredundant, simple SN modules. I really want to say ordinary. So in characteristic zero, this is the set of simple modules for the symmetric group. Okay, so that's the interest in these guys. And so when we want to look at positive characteristic, suddenly it's not really clear what the simple modules are. We still have an indexing set for them. And basically our main handhold on the simple modules in positive characteristic for the symmetric group are still these guys. So we take some subset of these partitions, and the SPECT modules indexed by those guys have simple heads, and we know that these simple heads give us, again, a complete set of simples. So whether you're looking at the ordinary representation theory, where this is really what you want if you want to find the simples, or when you're looking in positive characteristic, these still give you the main tool for trying to get your hands on simple modules. Okay, so one obvious question is thinking about, well, in characteristic zero, these things are simple. So what do they look like in positive characteristic? Okay, and there's two kind of natural things to think about here. One is composition factors. So it's not simple anymore, but we do know some labeling set for the simples. Can we talk about which simples arise in a given SPECT module in positive characteristic? And another, in some ways, even more basic question is, okay, let's not even try and decompose this or give a composition series for this or whatever, give composition factors, but let's just try and think about, is it even decomposable? Can I decompose it as a direct sum, or is it some complicated module structure? And so a pretty old result of James says that almost always these things are indecomposable. So if the characteristic is not 2, or lambda is too regular, which I'll define in a second, then S lambda is indecomposable. So when we're in this positive characteristic situation, even though these aren't simple, they are indecomposable. So really, there isn't as fundamental a question as saying, can we find a direct sum end of it? It really is just, it has some complicated module structure. There's a simple at the top if it's some in some subset, and otherwise it's some weird structure. But in the case where we're in characteristic 2 and lambda is not too regular, what does this mean? It has 2 repeated parts, or I'll just say has it repeat. So some integer in this partition appears at least twice. Okay, so if has no repeat. Good. Has no repeat. Okay, so if it does have a repeat and we're in characteristic 2, suddenly this result tells us nothing and life is pretty bad. Some special modules are decomposable, some are indecomposable, and in general, this is a very hard open question to determine which are decomposable, which are indecomposable, and even getting your hand on an example. If it's decomposable, then maybe you can prove it using some stuff about endomorphisms. But to prove that a given special module is indecomposable is a lot of work. And to prove it in general for a big family is horrific. Okay, so what can we say? So we need to narrow our view a little bit. So let me just say, in general, it's difficult to see what happens in characteristic 2. Okay, so one silly basic fact that we can say is that S lambda is decomposable if and only if S lambda prime is, where this thing is the transpose. Is everyone familiar with transposes of partitions? Is this familiar or nothing? Okay, all right, so we kind of halved the amount of work we have to do. We can kind of assume that it's in some ways top heavy so that it kind of looks like an arm rather than like a leg, if that makes sense, if that's terminology you're aware of. Basically, more stuff above the diagonal than below the diagonal in some ways. And so I cut the task in half, but it's still some arbitrarily large task to determine what's going on here. Okay, so at this point, as I've said, it's really difficult to get anything very general out. So a natural thing is to consider tractable families where we can hope to actually find something that we can say. And this is what Murphy did in 1980. This is Gwendolyn Murphy, not Jean Murphy. Okay, so what she did was she focused in on a specific type of partition known as hook partitions. So this is a partition where you have a row of length A and then a bunch of ones. Okay, so this is a hook partition, and let's just say A plus B equals N, so this is a module over Sn. So what she showed was that if N is even, then S lambda is indecomposable. Okay, and this is actually quite easy. In the N is even case, it turns out that there's just trivial endomorphisms for this spec module, so you don't need to do that much work once you can show that. But when N is odd, life becomes quite awkward, and it's quite some convoluted condition. So, when it's odd, think about n being greater than or equal to 2b, and then if it's less than or equal to 2b, use this kind of transposing to deduce the rest. Then, I guess I'll move up here, S lambda is indecomposable if and only if a minus b minus 1 is congruent to 0 modulo 2 to the power of some L, where this L is defined as follows. So it's given by which two powers this B sits between. Okay, so it's some awkward combinatorial thing. So given some spec module, you kind of need to do some annoying checking here to determine whether or not it's decomposable. And I'll do a quick example of what we see. So when n is 13, then this is what you get. Okay, so if you have 13 or 12, 1, these are both indecomposable but boring. So these are both boring because they're both too regular. And so James already tells us that these are indecomposable. We've learned nothing new. Okay, so we don't really care so much about that. What else do we have? 11, 1 squared, 10, 1 cubed, 9, 1 to the 4, 8, 1 to the 5, and 7, 1 to the 6, and a bunch of conjugates. And what Murphy's result tells us is that this guy is indecomposable. The next three are decomposable. And then this last one is indecomposable. Okay, so if you then take conjugates, you're going to get another three decomposables down here. So you get six decomposables, and all the rest are indecomposable. Okay, but how many are actually indecomposable? You get this. If I ignore the boring ones, so these guys and their conjugates, then I really just have these two indecomposables and then the conjugate of this guy. So it seems like some large proportion of them are decomposable, but to really figure it out in any given, for any given n, I need to apply Murphy's kind of slightly awkward result. Okay, and if n equals 7, if n equals 21, then we see that 5 out of 17, I'll say interesting, meaning ruling out the ones that we get for free from James. Decomposable. Okay, so it seems like a lot of them are decomposable. But really, to work out which ones of these spectral modules decompose in characteristic 2, it's kind of awkward. Okay, so this was back in 1980, so what has been done since then? And the answer, annoyingly, for the symmetric group is very little. Okay, so we have a partial result from 2012, so 32 years later, someone was able to say a little bit more. So this is Dodge and Fayers in 2012. So they looked at families of partitions of the form A3 onto the B. Okay, so really all they've done here is added a couple of boxes to the second row with A greater than or equal to 4, B greater than or equal to 2.
Excuse me, is anyone missing a phone? No?
Nope. Sorry. Okay, so if we have this partition that's again basically a hook but with an extra couple of boxes in the second row and some condition about how big the arm and leg need to be, then S lambda is decomposable if at least one of the following holds. Okay, and so we have three conditions that we need to check, and if any of them hold, we have a decomposable spectral module. So if the sum of A and B is 0 or 2 mod 8 with A at least 6, B at least 4, then we have decomposable spectral module. Similarly, A plus B congruent to 2 mod 4 and A plus B minus 3, choose A minus 3 is odd, then it's decomposable. And finally, if A plus B is congruent to 0 mod 4 and A plus B minus 9, choose A minus 5 is odd. Okay, so again, some weird conditions which come out of their strange proof, basically. They exhibit some homomorphisms from some known irreducible spectral module or something into this and back again, and so they get that this thing is a sum-end. Okay, and you get all these weird conditions, but still it's not a complete result. So this is an if condition, and so even best case scenario, you'd say, okay, they couldn't show that the rest are indecomposable because this is hard work, but actually even that's not true, that they don't even capture all the decomposables. So just going slightly far away from hooks, you already get to the point where I mean, their result captures a big family of decomposables and the first known family of decomposables for over 30 years, but still there are others missing of this form, and they can't say anything about partitions, kind of all the remaining guys. They can't show indecomposability. Okay, so in general, this is a crazy difficult problem, and it seems like if you focus on the symmetric group, you can't take this much further, right? Especially if you want a complete classification like Murphy. It's a lot of hard work. Okay, so a natural way of generalizing this is instead of talking about the symmetric group, we can talk about its Hecker algebra. Okay. So natural generalization, consider the Hecker algebra of Sn. Okay, and so this is the unital associative F algebra Hn with generators. So what you do, if you haven't seen this before, is you basically take the Coxeter presentation for the symmetric group and you deform the quadratic relation a little bit. So generators T1 up to Tn minus 1 and relations. So you kind of tweak this quadratic relation a bit. So this thing doesn't square to the identity anymore. You get some weird thing involving a Q, and then all the other relations are the same. So this is if I and J are far enough apart, and then braid relations. Okay, so you get the same braid relations as in the symmetric group, but when you want to square an element, you get that element again with some multiple of Q and then some constant. Okay, so this is a deformation of the symmetric group for Q, an element in your field, which is Q and F, a primitive eth root of unity. Okay, so let's do it for this. If we choose Q to be not a root of unity, then it's going to kind of look like the symmetric group in characteristic zero. So let's focus on this case where it's interesting. Okay, so what can we say about the Hecker algebras? So a lot of what you can say about the symmetric group, you can import almost word for word here for the Hecker algebras, at least if you want to make statements and not definitions. So there is some definition of a spec module here, and a lot of this setup is the same, and then you can make theorems that look like theorems over there, and kind of what we've said about spec modules, if you just replace P with E. And so now, when I make these statements, I don't care about the characteristic of the field, but I say, if E is equal to zero, or in other words, if it's not a root of unity, then these spec modules that we can define, again, give us a complete set of simple modules. If E is some non-zero, some integer, then we're in this case over here. Oh, I never wrote it out. I said it out loud. We're in this case where, again, we have some subset of these partitions. We take the corresponding subset of spec modules, take their heads, and we have a full set of simples. So over Hn, have spec modules again, so it's all defined very similarly. So if you've seen either of these things, you know that these things have a basis given by standard lambda tableau, and you have actions of either your Hecker algebra or your symmetric group on these. So have spec modules, and these are the simples. Or equals, I guess I'll say zero. So what I mean is when it's not an eth root of unity. Okay, so Again, so we care about these because when e is 0, these are all the simples. When e is some other integer, it gives us our handhold on the simples. So what can we say about decomposability now? OK, so my rule was basically replace p with e everywhere. And indeed, we get the exact statement that we have up there with an e instead. So this is a theorem of Dipper and James from when they first started studying these Hecker algebras. So if e is not equal to 2 now, or lambda is 2 regular, then S lambda is indecomposable. OK, so again, the natural question is, what happens if we have e equal to 2? So in other words, I've chosen q to be minus 1 in my field. It's a primitive second root of unity. And I have lambda being 2 singular. So there's repeated parts in lambda. OK, and again, as you'd guess, just like in the symmetric group, it's a crazy difficult question to answer in complete generality. OK, but what I did in my first ever paper during my PhD is I looked at Murphy's result for these Hooke partitions, and I looked at what happens if you try and do this for the Hecker algebra. OK? And actually, it turns out that, so maybe you know, if you look at E equal to P, so I have some Hecker algebra, I've chosen Q to be an E3 of unity. If I look at it in characteristic E, if E is a prime, then actually all I get is the symmetric group itself. OK, so in other words, when E equal to 2, if I choose a field of characteristic 2, I'm just looking at the symmetric group in characteristic 2, and we have Murphy's result. But if I ignore that and look at P greater than 2, which includes P equals 0, then what I get is a much cleaner result than Murphy's for some reason. For some reason, it's just much easier to determine whether or not these things are decomposable. So the result is as follows. So suppose we're not in characteristic 2. And again, we take Hooke partitions, A1 to the B. Then S lambda is indecomposable. If and only if N is even or B equals 2 or 3 with P dividing the ceiling function of A over 2. OK, so over in both cases, we have whenever N is even, everything is nice. We have a one-dimensional endomorphism ring. No further thought is needed. It's indecomposable. But when N is odd, Murphy's result involves some like awkward checking, and you need to find some power of 2 and do some check, and kind of decomposables and indecomposables come up all over the place as you run down your list of partitions. But for some reason here, there's only these couple of small cases where you can get indecomposables, and as soon as you get B big enough, everything is always decomposable. And even for small b, it's only indecomposable if you have this condition about the characteristic dividing something or other. OK, so basically, semi-ignoring this, it basically splits into even and odd. If n is even, it's indecomposable. If n is odd, it's decomposable. So that's pretty clean.
So we should expect that over the Hecker algebra, more things will be decomposable, because you might have like an idempotent that uses a 1 minus q in the denominator.
Is that your feeling? Is that why you think more things are decomposable? I don't have a good feel for why it happens. It's strange that so many more things are decomposable in the Hecker algebra. Like, so if we just apply it over here, then it's saying this indecomposable thing is now decomposable. And I don't really have a good feel for why that is.
Well, I mean.
And then in n equals 21, there's a bunch more as well. But so these kind of handful of indecomposables that you get.
I mean, you have some idempotent endomorphism, and it must be that it blows up when you specialize q equals 1, right? Or, Right, dividing by p is dividing by 1 minus q, and must not be defined, mod B, right?
What mustn't be defined?
The projection, because then it would be decomposed.
I see. So you're saying start with there's some projection onto a sum and here, and then when you...
Yeah. Well, that's just my...
It's kind of hard to see the connection. I don't know. Maybe... I don't know. It's strange. So I didn't think about it in that light. I kind of brute forced it and calculated endomorphisms in this. And what I did, I guess I'll speak about the method more because we're doing a similar thing in this work joint with Louise. So I'll talk about the method more. But basically, we work in the KLR algebra, and we kind of just find an item. So in these kind of degenerate cases, we need to find idempotent endomorphisms if they exist and or show that there can't be one. And then in the bigger situation, kind of getting far away from that, but n is odd, you have tons and tons of endomorphisms. And so it's kind of hard to do what Murphy did and completely determine the endomorphism space working in KLR algebras. But we just kind of get our hand on one, which isn't an idempotent. So it's kind of annoying. But we still use it to decompose stuff. So this is what I did here, and this is what we're doing. So I'll talk more about this in a minute. OK. So anyway, so using that, we're able to kind of show that it is decomposable. I don't have any nice information about what the sumands are or anything like that. Okay, so that's symmetric groups and Hecker algebras. And again, nothing beyond this. I mean, it took people over 30 years to extend Murphy's result just a tiny bit. And this result is fairly recent, so I don't see this being extended anytime soon for the Hecker algebra. And even looking at this kind of situation here is, I don't know how interesting that is. It's kind of a lot of work for a very small reward, it seems. Okay, so instead, what I want to do is find a bigger family, something more like Murphy's result, and get something maybe a bit more flashy, rather than just here's a few decomposables, maybe I can give some big family that I can classify. Okay, so I'm going to talk about KLR algebras, because this is the setting that I do all of this work in. So even down here, really what I'm doing is working with KLR algebras. So we can further generalize Hecker algebras. So instead of deforming just Sn, what I can do is deform a complex reflection group, Z over Lz, ref Sn. OK, so this is some complex reflection group now, cyclic group, ref Sn. If I choose L to be equal to 2, this is just the type B Weyl group, Coxeter group. And for L bigger, it's just some other complex reflection group. And we can deform these and get cyclotomic Hecker algebras. OK, so this is the natural generalization of this kind of progression, looking at symmetric groups, looking at Hecker algebras. These things generalize to these things called cyclotomic Hecker algebras. But that's not the name of my section title, so what the hell is a KLR algebra? Well, first of all, why do I care? And that's the following theorem of Brunnen and Kleshev. And I suppose also Rukier, and since been proved by many people, including Ben. So this isomorphism that I'm going to introduce has a kind of a bunch of different ways it's been introduced now. But basically, the point is that the, I'll say integral without saying what that means, but some large family of cyclotomic Hecker algebras that we care about with E greater than or equal to 2 is isomorphic to A. OK, so really, I want to think of this L as being the level here, something I call the level. And so I can do this for the cyclotomic Hecker algebra of level L. And I also can talk about a level L cyclotomic KLR algebra. This is Kovanov, Lauda, and Ricci algebra. Of type. So it's affine type A if E is finite, or A infinity if E is infinity. So all this means, and this thing, some dominant weight, okay, so what does any of this mean? Okay, so these types are just some quiver, some Dinkin type, and associated to that Dinkin type, you can construct a KLR algebra. So Kovanov, Lauda, and then independently Rukia constructed these algebras motivated by some categorification of quantum groups. But for what we're doing here, what we care about is this isomorphism. And it says, if I take that algebra and take some quotient of it, and the quotient corresponds to choosing, basically choosing L integers, if you like, and you get some dominant weight, you take the corresponding cyclotomic quotient, this thing somehow will have some correspondence on the other side of the isomorphism. But every cyclotomic Hecker algebra arises as one of these KLR algebras. So if I want to study any of this stuff, symmetric groups, Hecker algebras, or more generally the cyclotomic Hecker algebras, I can just work through this isomorphism and just work with the KLR algebras. Okay, so why do I want to do that? What is the KLR algebra? So R lambda n is, again, unital associative F algebra with generators so EI as we range over all n tuples of integers mod E. And then we have these Y generators, Y1 up to YN. And then we have a bunch of Psi generators. OK, so, and many relations, too many to write out. Don't really gain much from it. OK, so it's basically a more horrific presentation for the same algebra. So why do I care? So one thing is that this is Z graded. And so via this isomorphism, all of these algebras that I've spoken about so far are Z graded. And to see the graded structure, really I want to work with this. Okay, sure, but the question I'm asking isn't really a question of any graded stuff, so maybe I don't care too much. But really, we have some tools. We have a nice presentations and bases and things for spec modules. So that's my main reason for working on this side is that. So while I'm doing that, how should I think of things? Well, these guys here are some idempotents. And they are orthogonal. And sum to one. Okay, these guys are kind of like Eustace Murphy elements in the symmetric group, if you know anything about those. But they're a little bit different, so even if you don't worry. And these are as close as we're going to get to our, or even did I write them, this T1 up to Tn minus 1, these Coxeter generators. Okay, so we have some, broadly speaking, we have some similar relations to these kind of things, but actually it's a bit more complicated. When you square these, you have a bunch of different things that you can get depending on what idempotent you hit it with, and the braid relations often have error terms. So really this is a pretty horrible presentation compared to, say, just the Hecker algebra one. So let's see if I can convince you that it's worth working with this. Okay, so in the symmetric group and the Hecker algebra, we had partitions indexing this family of spec modules. And these gave us all of our simples in the semi-simple case, which over here was in characteristic zero. But in this more general case, it's not going to be characteristic zero quite. But still, in the semi-simple case, we're going to get some family of spec modules. So first of all, let's say what they're indexed by. So we have special modules for this guy, indexed by L multipartitions. N. So what does one of these look like? This is just an L tuple of partitions. So we take L separate partitions such that the sum of their sizes is N. Okay, so I don't care where different, like how big each individual piece is, as long as the total size is N. So I have L separate pieces. Total size is n, a bunch of them can be empty, I don't care. So this is some huge family of things. For each one of these, I can construct a spec module, and a lot of the story is analogous to the Hecker algebra and the symmetric group, though slightly more complicated. Okay, and we have a bunch of tableau combinatorics. Which is going to be important in trying to explain to you what the spec modules are here and why it helps. So let me just kind of define things by example. So T lambda is the column initial lambda tableau. Okay, so let's see what I mean by this. So I'm actually going to start drawing Young diagrams now. This will be the kind of combinatorial foundations of how any of these things are built, these modules. So if I take lambda to be the bipartition where the first part is 4, 3, and the second part is 3, 2, 1, what do I draw? Well, I draw 4 and then 3. I'm going to draw T lambda, so I'll write that now. Okay, and then 3, 2, 1. Okay, so I just draw each individual part, one above the other, and then the column initial tableau says I fill in the numbers in order, down column, starting from the leftmost column, but because the world is cruel, I have to start from the last piece and work backwards. Okay, it is what it is. So I do this, I just fill in the numbers down columns of the final piece and then go up to the piece above and do the same thing. Okay, so here's my initial tableau. Has residue, I should say residue sequence, I lambda given by reading residues in order of entries. Okay, and what are the residues? Well, the residue of a given box is just column number minus row number plus something I'm not going to care about because I'm going to be setting it to zero, mod e. Okay, so in the case I care about, this thing is zero, but normally you have to shift some stuff. But basically, I say, I look at these boxes in order and I say, what's the column number minus the row number here? It's zero, minus one, minus two, one, zero, and so on. I just read these out in order and take it mod e. Okay, and this gives me some sequence of some n tuple of residues mod e. Okay. And now given any other tableau, so I can fill these with these numbers in some different order, and there'll be some permutation which takes this guy to that other guy. So given a tableau T, WT is defined to be a permutation taking the initial tableau to T, where we act in the obvious way. Okay, and that's pretty much all the combinatorics I need to at least define what this spec module is now by generators and relations and give a basis for it. And that's pretty much all we need for most of our kind of calculations and stuff here. So this lambda is the cyclic Rn lambda module with homogeneous generator. So everything, there's graded stuff everywhere, but we're going to ignore it because, again, I don't need it here. But this thing is homogeneous. OK, and the presentation here is very simple. So all of the idempotents except one kill this guy. And the one that doesn't is exactly the residue corresponding to the initial tableau. And then what other generators do we have? Well, we have y's and psi's. Every single y kills it. OK, and then what about psi's? Psi r, z lambda, kills it whenever r and r plus 1 are in the same column of the initial tableau. OK, so in our example here, we get that psi 1, 2, 4, 7, 9, 11 all kill this generator. And then we don't know what happens when we hit it with psi 3, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12. OK, so we get a bunch of these generators just kill everything. And then there's some other things called Garnier relations, which are kind of complicated. But they're basically just some linear combination of products of more of these psi generators. OK, but the first three families of generators is basically, or of relations here, is basically almost everything in sight kills this one cyclic generator. And then some other annoying thing also kills it. OK, so they're pretty easy to define with some presentation like this. And we see that the initial tableau plays some role for some reason with its residue coming up. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to skip over a detail here. It doesn't matter too much. But basically, so here's a presentation, and then we also have a basis. So take lambda to be an L multipartition of n, then S lambda is graded with homogeneous basis given by Vt. So this product of psi's, which I'll define in a second. And we just range over all standard lambda tableau. So same as for the symmetric group, if I want a basis for the spec module, I somehow range over all standard lambda tableau and do something. Over here, I do the same thing. What do I do? Well, if Wt is Si1 up to Sir, then Psi t is the same thing, but I replace each Coxeter generator by a Psi. OK, so I just say, what's the permutation which gets me from the initial tableau to t? Now write that out as a product of simple transpositions. And for each one, sub in the corresponding Psi, which I said over there was kind of like the Coxeter generators. OK, and this gives me a basis of S lambda. OK, so I have a presentation and a basis, which the best thing about this for us right here is that we want to talk about, we want to find decomposable SPECT modules. And one way of doing this is to look at endomorphisms. Well, I have a generator. So to determine an endomorphism, I just say, what does the generator map to? Well, I have a basis, so it maps to some linear combination of these basis vectors. Which linear combination? Any that satisfies these. OK, so I just map z lambda to some linear combination and see what linear combinations die when I hit it with all of this stuff. OK, and it's maybe more effective than it sounds to actually do this. OK, so now we can start talking about decomposability. So these are the SPECT modules. They have a basis and a presentation. When are they decomposable? When are they not? So So first of all, what's the analog of this kind of P or E not equal to 2 thing? Well, we have something similar. And this can be found in a paper by Ruquier from 2008, or in another form, my paper with Matt Fayers in 2016. Does this by actually looking at homomorphisms. So if we're in the case where E is not equal to 2, just like in the Hecker algebra, and furthermore, kappa I is not equal to kappa j, so I said this somehow determined what quotient we're in, and it somehow plays a role. Maybe I should just say this is going to be some kappa. Okay, so this thing down here is where this comes in. So if we assume that these L different integers are distinct mod E, or lambda is conjugate Kleshev, then S lambda is indecomposable. Okay, so a bunch of this stuff is basically completely analogous to the level one stuff. So conjugate Kleshev is basically the higher level analog of 2-regular or P-regular in general. It's basically saying, in the non-semi-simple case, which ones index a set of simples, and here's one indexing set. Okay, so if we have that it's conjugate Kleshev, then we know that it has a simple head and therefore it's indecomposable. So that's that. Or in general, if we're in the case where E is not equal to 2 and all of this L tuple of integers are all distinct, then also every Svet module is just indecomposable. Okay, so we want to consider when two of these guys coincide, two or more of them, and when lambda is bad, whatever that means. Okay, and again, this is pretty difficult to do this in any amount of generality in one go. So we're going to work with level 2. And so this condition means really we want to assume either E equal to 2 or that the two integers kappa 1 and kappa 2 coincide, in which case we might as well let them both be 0. And so this is what we do. It's maybe the E equals 2 case is something for future work, but for now we're just assuming kappa, the two kappas coincide. So level 2 by this theorem can assume E is 2 or kappa 1 equals kappa 2. We're going to focus in on this thing. So kappa is just 0, 0, whatever. So it's some specific cyclotomic quotient we take. It's somehow some degenerate version here we're looking at where some of these coincide. And so this is why I get to ignore this and just look at column number minus row number. OK, so the question is, I have some level 2 thing. So this is now a Hecker algebra of the type B Weyl group. Its Svet modules are indexed by bipartitions, many of which are not conjugate Kleshev, whatever that means. Do any of these things give me decomposables? Okay, so again, this is impossible in general, so we need to focus in on some subfamily. In level 1, Murphy looked at hooks, so what we thought was a natural generalization was to look at bihooks, so just things where both partitions, both components are just hooks. Okay. So we look at bihooks. Lambda just A, 1 to the B is the first partition, and then the second one is C, 1 to the D. Okay. So what can we say about this? So the first result is something we're currently calling small bihooks. I don't know if we'll change that name if we manage to push this any further. OK, Okay, so we get a complete classification for small by hooks. What do I mean by small by hooks? For n less than or equal to 2e. Okay, so up to 2e, we can get a complete classification at the moment. We can probably push this a bit further, I'm not sure. Then S lambda is decomposable. So here I'm assuming lambda is a bi-hook, any old bi-hook. Decomposable if and only if n is equal to 2e and lambda is just a 1 to the b repeated, a 1 to the b. So if I put this restriction on n being anything up to 2e, it's only going to be decomposable in the case where we just get some hook partition of e repeated twice. Okay, all others are indecomposable. And actually, so it's pretty easy to prove when n is strictly less than 2e, it turns out lambda is always conjugate Kleshev. So there it's always indecomposable, so kind of not very interesting. When n is equal to 2e, we kind of look at homomorphisms and do some mumbo-jumbo to show that actually this is the only one that stands a chance of being decomposable, and then explicitly show that it is by finding some idempotent endomorphism. OK, so that's some very small case. What about when we let n get bigger? Well, unfortunately, it's now much harder to show that anything is indecomposable because you tend to get these massive endomorphism spaces. And it's pretty hard to see that you can't possibly have an idempotent one in there. OK, so it's still work in progress. But first thing we can say is we have actually done so let lambda be kk. So just two components which are both just like a trivial, just a row of length k. Then S lambda is decomposable if and only if k is greater than or equal to e. So if k is less than e, then obviously it's covered by this, that it's indecomposable. And it turns out if it's bigger than e, then always this thing's still going to be decomposable. OK, and we actually use some tricks here using induction and restriction functors. OK, and so using these induction restriction functors, what we show is that SKEKE is decomposable if and only if SKE plus A 1 to the B, KE plus A 1 to the B. So somehow you're allowed to add a bunch of boxes onto the first row, add a bunch of boxes onto the leg, as long as you do it to both simultaneously. But you can only add fewer than E boxes in each case. So A is between 0 and E minus 1. Oh, I guess they both are. And they don't sum up to E. OK, so what I do is, it turns out all I need to prove is for multiples of E. And then I can just add in, I can choose B equal to 0, and I can add in up to E minus 1 boxes. And that gets me KE plus 1 plus 2 plus up to K plus 1 lots of E minus 1. And then prove the KE, KE guy. OK, so in order to prove that we have some massive family of decomposable space modules with bi-hooks that look like this, all we need to do is prove that these guys are always decomposable. OK, so that's what we do. I think I mean to add a condition here. So outside of characteristic 2. So outside of characteristic 2, I kind of get this and a bunch more stuff just by looking at all multiples of E. Okay. So I get a bunch of these things which are decomposable outside of characteristic 2, and then we find some, maybe I'll say quickly about the technique, because I kind of mentioned it in passing earlier. Prove that SKE, KE is decomposable by finding endomorphism, say phi, such that phi has distinct eigenvalues mod p. Okay, and that's the issue. It turns out this phi that we construct for all of these special modules has all even eigenvalues. So this doesn't work in characteristic 2. But outside of characteristic 2, it's easy to show that you have two eigenvalues differing by only 2. And so even if one of them's 0, the other one won't be. So you always have at least 2 eigenvalues. And then you can just decompose this as a sum of generalized eigenspaces. And it's not hard to see that these actually are still modules. And so we get some decomposition that way. OK, but it's kind of a silly thing. We don't really get it explicitly. We just say, OK, we find 2 out of the very many eigenvalues. A computer can find a ton. I've written code that does it, but it's hard work. So we just kind of look for the easiest 2, show their eigenvalues, show that they're different mod p, and then we're done. OK, so that's one really large family which doesn't really depend on p except for this statement. So if we ignore characteristic 2 because it's horrible, then we have this family that always exists. OK, and then finally, more recently still, we have some more decomposables that we found, which now do depend on p. And so part of this is conjectural. And it's so conjectural that I can't even give you what the dependence on p is. But I'll give you first the bit that we did actually prove. So first of all, if lambda is E, oh, and everywhere you can take the kind of whatever the conjugate is in level 2, you conjugate each part and switch their orders. And so I've kind of only written this one way around. But for instance, when we have KE, KE, you can make this 1 to the power of KE, 1 to the power of KE. So there's conjugates of all the statements follow for free. So if lambda is something like this, or the other way around, KEE, and K is at least 1, or bigger than 1, sorry, and S lambda is decomposable if and only if P does not divide K plus 1. OK, so this is one of the rare instances that we actually kind of compute all the endomorphisms. And so again, we can say in a bunch of cases it's not decomposable. But the main thing is we find this big family of other decomposables. And I can use the same induction restriction trick. And I might mess this up, so I'll just write it roughly in case this is wrong. So again, I can add boxes. To each row and each leg and each arm, as long as I do the same amount for both. Or the other way around. Okay, so we get, again, just like this KE, KE trick here gets me this big family of decomposables. I do the same thing for this, and I get some big family of decomposables. Okay. And now finally, conjectural. So here I at least have a condition on P, but I'm not sure what it should be in general. So it's easy to see that to generalize this, I just want 2 different multiples of E. So if lambda is KE, JE at least one of them bigger than one, then S lambda is decomposable. I guess there'll be an if and only if condition in there somewhere, but something about P, don't know. It might be something like P not dividing K plus one or J plus one, something like that. So this is still work in progress. So again, you can do the same trick as this to add a bunch of boxes onto the first row of each one, like A boxes to the first row of both, B boxes to the column of both. Okay, and then the interesting thing here is the conjecture I'm going to end with. So in the case of Craig Dodge and Matt Fayers, this A3, 1 to the B, I made the point that they don't even find all the decomposables, let alone conjecture that the others are indecomposable. But we conjecture that this is everything. So this family here that's completely independent of P, if P is not 2, and then this family here and all the stuff you can get by adding a few boxes on with some condition on P, this is all of the decomposables. Hook label. Okay, and again, this is going to be something impossible to show because there's a ton of bi hooks, and to show that something is indecomposable is very, very difficult. But we think we found all of the decomposables, which is kind of half the battle. We can basically say we know all of the ones of blah form will be indecomposable. So at least we have a statement, even if we can't prove it. And that's everything I wanted to say. Thank you. Sorry for overrunning.
So I think it's forgivable. So you mentioned having sort of computer computations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have computer evidence for there being no other decomposable ones labeled by bihooks?
Yep. I've checked in characteristic 3 and 5 for E equal to 3 all the way up to about N is 20. Nothing new appears. That's fairly convincing. That's almost 7e, up to 7e, nothing new appears, which would be very strange if it starts appearing even later than that, as there seems to be some kind of symmetry when you kind of add e boxes to both components, or just add in e to one component like this.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff kind of starts repeating. There's some hope of like extending this small bihooks thing up to n as 4e, which is what I tried to do. Because there's not very many things that aren't covered by induction and restriction. And so it seems like you only have to show some small family of special modules that are indecomposable, and the rest you kind of get for free.
Mm-hmm.
But that turns out to be really hard. So I don't know if we'll do that or not. But beyond 4e, there's too much stuff going on.
Does this stuff play nicely with them? Like various people, including my advisor, Nosky,
mm-hmm.
have this stuff about affine SLP.
Mm-hmm.
These guys seem to be part of the same story here. Like,
yeah, so these KLR algebras really arise from that stuff. So these KLR algebras are categorifying, if you like. So because we're sticking to type A, it really is just categorifying the quantum group in those types. So the universal enveloping algebra for SLN hat, SLE hat. And so there is kind of this categorification result really does bring the link between that side of the picture and this stuff. Not so much for decomposability. I can't say how decomposability comes into it, but things like even the induction and restriction functors, really they coincide with these kind of EIs and FIs on the SLN hat side of the story.
And I mean, your trick here for adding, you know, going from the KE to these other guys, this is presumably basically like applying the...
Yeah, applying it the maximal number of times, and like applying EI the maximum number of times, and then applying FI the maximum number of times. So if I can add on all the I nodes, remove all the inodes and I get back where I started, then I know that one is decomposable if and only if the other one is.
I mean, this is like this Chuang-Wurkia equivalence between blocks.
Is it? Mm-hmm. That's what they do. They add in the maximum number and remove them or whatever, and that gives you a derived equivalence between those blocks?
But yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, if you have a module which is killed by one of the EIs,
some power of EIs, yeah.
By the EIs, then their equivalence is just applying FI to it the correct number of times. Okay. So the thing that was sort of interesting about their picture is, like, if it isn't killed by the EIs, then it's a very complicated complex. But,
right. So the way you do it is, if, say, this thing where you've added boxes is mu, if you get from lambda to mu by just hitting it with EI n times and the other way around with the FIs, then one is decomposable if and only if the other one is, because somehow you're stripping off all possible inodes. There's not, like, many modules that can appear. It's just the one special module you get.
Yeah, I mean, there's some fancy way of saying this, of, like, if you look at the things, the subcategory of modules that are killed by EI, FI the correct number of times is an equivalence to the subcategory and the other guy of things that are killed by FI.
Right. But does that equivalence help you with the decomposability question?
Well,
is that just a fancier way of applying these functions?
It's just basically restating this.
Right, okay.
Maybe there's some...
So it comes, I can't remember what the argument is, but it's something to do with... preserving composition length or something.
Something about Schmeck modules.
If you have something that's a sum and of one, and then you apply all of these EIs to it, you're going to get something that's a sum and of the other. Basically, something like that. But anyway, it's strange that they fit into two families, like KE, and the stuff you can get by adding on a few nodes. So notice that you can't have both the arm and the leg being both longer than E, right? Because I'm allowed to add on up to E minus one nodes to each.
Yeah.
And then if I conjugate, fine, I get an arm that's super short. So that's really strange that none of the decomposables have arms and legs both quite long. Everything's focused around one being really short. And also around, I mean, so this characteristic free guy is always repeated. Both components are identical. And then when you come over here and you have some reliance on characteristic, it's not quite repeated, but you have this thing where they only differ by some multiple of E in the first row. And it's strange that, I mean, the bi-hooks can get so much crazier than that, and the two components can look completely different, and even when they're in the same block, you're never going to get... Yeah, it's strange. I don't know why there aren't more decomposables, but computer evidence will suggest that's the case.